This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Friday, April 9th, 2021. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home studio in New York. And in New York yesterday, we saw one of the biggest controversies early in the early season, the Mets and the Marlins. What a game this was. In the bottom of the ninth inning, Jeff McNeil came to the plate for the Mets with New York down by a run.
They play McNeil to pull in the outfield. 3-1 the count. Bass to the belt. Here's the pitch. Swinging a fly ball to right field. Well hit. Duvall back. Still going at the track. At the wall. It's gone. McNeil does it. He leads off the bottom of the ninth with a game-tying home run. And this baby's all even 2-2.
And the Mets would go on and load the bases. Two outs. Michael Conforto at the plate. Here was the call on the Marlins radio network.
Now the 1-2, Conforto takes strike three called. It got him in the arm. No, now they're going to send him to first base. He hit him with the pitch and the ball game's over. The home plate umpire initially signaled strike three. Then he said, no, it hit him. Don Mattingly's out to argue. The Mets are celebrating a walk-off 3-2 win.
That was Glenn Geffner, 940 WINZ. Here was the call on WCBS, the Mets radio network.
Now the 1-2 pitch, breaking ball in there, strike three called.
It hit him.
And they're saying it nicked him on the arm. The game is over. It was called a strike initially, but then it was ruled that the ball hit Conforto. Michael gets to first base.
And on the Mets television network, those guys did a great job on SNY going crazy, saying, come on. He obviously stuck his elbow out as the ball was passing him. And you saw the reaction from the two radio broadcasts. Both of them saw the strike three call by Ron Culpa. Taylor, you were watching the game. What was your take on it? Because that was one where you're like, come on, that's a terrible way for the Marlins to lose the game.
Oh, yeah, that's gutting for sure. He definitely was looking to get hit. But, you know, hey, that's the way it crumbled there. It was weird that the umpire was going for the strike and then called the hit by pitch. I feel like we've had a couple times early in the season where it's like the umpires need to be more decisive with these calls here. I think Dave Roberts talked about it on opening day.
Michael Conforto spoke with reporters afterward about what happened.
Well, obviously not the way that I wanted to win the ball game. You know, I wanted to go up there and put the ball in play and, you know, drive a ball somewhere. From my point of view, you know, it was a slider. Felt like it was coming back to me, and I just, you know, I turned. There may have been a little lift in my elbow just out of habit, out of reaction, and it barely skimmed the edge of my elbow guard. So, and I did see that he rung me up. I think that's why he didn't see a reaction from me right away. I didn't know what was going to happen after that moment. So, you know, I knew there was going to be some controversy. Our first base coach was yelling at me to get down there, touch the base, and let's get out of here. You know, like I said, a win's a win. It's over. But obviously, I'd like to use the bat next time for sure.
I tell you what, it was interesting, Taylor, hearing him. I mean, the word sheepish, does that apply there? Embarrassed a little bit? That was kind of cool.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'm glad that he capped it off with, I want to use my bat next time.
Right, exactly. And I reached out to players with other teams, asked them about what they thought about that play and what might happen with Michael Conforto moving forward. And I'll tell you about that when I talk to Carl Ravitch coming up. Here's Don Mattingly, the Marlins manager.
Well, we've seen a strike. That's what you end up seeing, a ball in the strike zone, strike. And the time before when he got hit early in the game and they felt like he turned into it and tried to get hit on that one early in the game. And then that one there makes a clear move to get hit, try to get hit. But for me, I guess the tough part is you can't really tell in the replay that if it hits him or not. And I guess the toughest part is it's just a strike. That kind of that simple. You would think all the replay we do that you could say that ball's a strike. I wonder what happens when they put the automated strike zone in and it breaks the paint plane and the guy does that. I wonder if it's a strike or not. That'd be a question for later, I guess.
And a great question. Meanwhile, Mike Trout and the Angels continue to do damage.
Here's the pitch, and Mike Trout swings at that one and drills a ball deep into left center field. It is Trout of here. Boy, he hit that one out of sight there against Stripling. Trout has been on fire. That's home run number 3 of the season, and that will give the Angels a 4-3 lead.
That from Angels Radio. Yeah, the Angels off to a really great start. Red Sox and Orioles, and the big moment in this game was when Trey Mancini, who has come all the way back from cancer to play this year, stepped into the batter's box for the first time at Camden Yards yesterday. He got a standing ovation. The Red Sox players were clapping. The fans were clapping. Afterward, Trey Mancini talked about that moment.
It was amazing. Well documented at this point what I went through and, you know, what it took to get back to playing, and nothing short of what I expected. I think when I came out on the mini orange carpet we had, I wasn't expecting a prolonged ovation then. I thought it was going to be more, you know, when I was hitting, and even though it was like 25% capacity, it felt like a full stadium out there, and I have goosebumps thinking about it. So definitely had to fight back some tears there when I got the first ovation. That's probably what will stick with me the most.
The Arizona Diamondbacks have a Mount Everest challenge in front of them in the National League West because, of course, they have to overcome the Dodgers and the Padres. Well, they got bad news this week. Ketel Marte was placed on the 10-day injured list after injuring his right hamstring against the Colorado Rockies. So that absolutely stinks. And this was interesting. A story in The Athletic, Ken Rosenthal, about how when Trevor Bauer pitched the other day, some baseballs were collected by the umpires, maybe because of stuff on the balls. This was from ESPN's internal write-up. In March, Major League Baseball sent 2 different memos to clubs saying it would step up the monitoring enforcement of rules prohibiting pitchers from applying foreign substances to baseball. Less than 1 week into the season, the league's attempted crackdown is being put to the test, and a pitcher has been perhaps more outspoken than any other on the subject. The Dodgers right-hander Trevor Bauer already is drawing attention. The umpires and Bauer start against the Oakland Athletics on Wednesday, collected multiple balls he threw during the game. According to Major League sources, the balls had visible markings and were sticky and were sent to the league offices for further inspection. According to sources talking to The Athletic, I have strong feelings about this that I will share in just a moment. But Taylor, before we get to that, I'm very excited this weekend. You know, I've been working on this Freddie Freeman project, a 1-hour documentary that's going to air on Sunday. E60, I worked on it with Jen Carson, who does an amazing job for E60. That's going to air at 2:00 and 5:00 on Sunday. Freddie Freeman.
I'm very excited for you. I feel like you've been working on this since basically the entire time I've known you. So for it to be out into the world, and I watched the clip that we're going to play here on the podcast. It's great stuff. I'm very excited. Bring your tissues. Could we get a little misty up in here?
It really was an amazing interview, and I spoke on the Daily at length about that process. There's also a written piece that's going to come out on ESPN.com this weekend, so look for that as well. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
All aboard. It's the Rabbit Train with Carl Ravitch.
Carl Ravitch, Rabbit Train, host of Baseball Tonight, of course, play-by-play man for ESPN. Ravi, that Michael Conforto call yesterday, there's got to be some mechanism in place, right, to get the call right? Because wasn't that the intent of instant replay?
Well, it seems like these situations do crop up all the time, and the question always is, after there is no instant replay in place for a situation like that, isn't that the reason we have instant replay? I'm sure that there will be an adjustment to the instant replay rule that is reviewable, that someone intended to get hit by a pitch or didn't do anything to get out of the way of it. And certainly B applies to Michael Conforto.
Well, and I think you'll agree with me. I was, you know, having done this for a while and been on social media for a while, I was surprised and not surprised that all of a sudden you had Michael Conforto is the worst cheater ever. Michael Conforto is a disgrace. I'm like, oh, come on. He was, you know, he's in a big situation. He's got runners. He's got the bases loaded. He's looking for a pitch to hit. He was totally fooled. And what he did was a reflex. And I reached out to some players last night and said, hey, you know, what do you think about this? And one guy related the fact that in his clubhouse, all the players are watching. And out of the whole group, only one person who was offended. And of course, that was a veteran pitcher. The folks that I talked to last night were saying, look, are the Marlins going to do something? Yeah, they might. But it's more likely like someone will roll a ball up and hit him in the butt. That it's not going to be that big of a deal. To me, the bigger question is, you know, in that situation, an unusual situation when the home plate umpire calls a strike, it feels like that should open up the ability to review the play. Like, look, this is something, an unusual set of circumstances here. Let's go back and review and let's get the call right.
Well, I think what you're saying is wholly accurate, but there is no mechanism to do that. You know, the guys that were calling the game did a really good job. You can review whether the guy was hit by a pitch, which I think is what they looked at, and that was proven to be true. He was hit by the pitch. You can't review whether he intended to get hit by the pitch or didn't do anything to get out of the way, and he didn't. That would be a rule. That would be an adjustment to the rule that should be in place. And the idea that a pitcher in that opposing clubhouse is the only one upset. I mean, to me, you watch that review again at the end of it when the Mets are running into their locker room. Marcus Stroman is waving everyone like, let's get the hell off the field quick. Everybody in. We got away with one here. So they got away with one. But this is, look, how many times have we watched games where a guy actually gets out of the way of a bases loaded ball three pitch? And you're like, whoa. Dude, get hit by the pitch. We can get a run in here, but you try to avoid it. How many times have we gone that way, too?
Yep. Yeah, you're exactly right. Now, I would say there's one, because of the weirdness of this particular play, where the strike was called, and then, you know, then the home plate umpire was like, oh, he was hit by a pitch. It's a set of circumstances that I kind of wondered if baseball, and this would be a way to get the call right, there's that great rule book, rule 801C, which reads, each umpire has the authority to rule on any point not specifically covered in these rules. It's sort of like, look, if anything crazy happens, we'll let the umpires right. apply common sense. And I kind of wondered if that might be in play yesterday, just to make sure you get the call right. But anyway, all right, Mike Trout off to a great start this year. How cool is it, mate, that the best player in baseball might actually be playing in October?
It would be fantastic. Having Mike Trout on a team with a manager where there's a different feel and what Ohtani did on your game, a little bummed about the blister that he's got. That's, to me, a yellow flag. Like, really? Kind of like Aaron Judge. Really? Like, here we're going down this road again. We just started the season, and he's supposed to pitch every 5th, 6th, 7th, whatever day they were going to use him, and now we're going to put a hold on it. But, yeah, I mean, Trout's that guy who – you know, all of a sudden is hitting home runs in 3 straight games and says things like, I think I'm starting to get my swing back. No one else says that. You know, when they hit homers in 3 straight games, they would generally acknowledge, I'm kind of locked in, as opposed to, I think I'm getting close. But great to have him. Great to have the Angels play. And it looks like, at least early, the biggest problem for the Angels may again be the Astros, who are hitting the heck out of the baseball and look great.
Yeah, they look fantastic. Trout so far this year, Carl, he's got protection in front of him because he's got David Fletcher. You know, a lot of days he's got Shohei Ohtani. He's got protection behind him with Anthony Rendon. First 7 games hitting .417 with a .563 on base percentage, an .875 slug, 8 walks and 9 strikeouts. Yeah, this will be a lot of fun to watch to see what Mike Trout does. It's also been fun to watch the first week of the major league career of Yermín Mercedes. This is what he did yesterday.
Keller's offer. Mercedes launches. Deep to left. Gone. Back to back in the first.
Yeah, that's right. Our old friend Len Casper on the White Sox radio network. You know, and I know that there are a handful of these guys who bounce around the minor leagues and maybe they don't have a position, and you know, maybe there's some things that they don't necessarily do too well, but you know what? They can flat out rake. I think Jose Martinez for years kind of fell into that category. A guy didn't have a position, but he could flat out hit. And it's pretty clear Yimerman Mercedes can hit big league pitching.
There's no doubt that he can hit big league pitching, or at least having been given a chance in a lineup like that, kind of absorbing all the other things from people in that lineup is a huge asset for him. We have seen it, to your point, before, where you wonder, like, why has he been down and finally getting his chance? But look, maybe to me, it's just a fun, unbelievable beginning of the year story, similar to, you know, Badu is with Detroit. But the reason that Mike Trout is Mike Trout, or anybody even on the level below those guys, is they consistently do it. That's going to be the biggest challenge for Yimerman, because as we've all seen with most of these guys, pitchers actually adjust to what they're doing. And that becomes the biggest challenge for somebody like him. Once they've made the adjustment, figured out where I can be pitched to, what am I able to do? And maybe that's why it's been hard for him to get an opportunity, because there is a hole in there, or holes, and he hasn't been able to figure it out. But for now, ride that train, baby. And boy, do they need it with, you know, Eloy down for so long. So they've taken a real negative and in the short term turned it into something that they can deal with.
Yeah, that injury opened up the door for this great story. Yep. In the first week of the season. You know, he started his career with the Washington Nationals in the minor leagues, then went to the Baltimore Orioles. They checked around on it, and what I got back basically was, yep, the guy could always rake. You know, 10 years in the minor leagues, 302 average in the minor leagues, but there are questions about, you know, his work ethic. And you've seen him. He's a little bit, you know, he's a little bit heavier than some other players. Yep. And it feels like in the last couple of years, you know, he's addressed all that and he's taking advantage of this opportunity. So a really cool story. A story that kind of made me sick this morning, Carl, I got to tell you.
didn't stay down, did they?
I know, exactly. When I read this story about Trevor Bauer and baseballs from his last starts being collected. And I got to tell you, Carl, I mean, we talked a lot on the podcast about foreign substances and how prevalent they've been. And you and I could sit and watch a game over the last decade and say, yep, that guy's doing it. See, he's doing it right there. Yep, he's rubbing that spot on his forearm of his glove hand, and everyone on the field knows that it's happening. This year, it feels like there's this little shadow war going on where Major League Baseball has sent the memo to teams, you know, made it clear, look, we're not going to tolerate foreign substances as we move forward, because we really feel like that if it affects offense in baseball. But this, with Trevor Bauer the other day, with his start and what happened in that start and the aftermath, it feels like a shadow war, and it feels a little bit gross. Because my feeling has been all along, look, Major League Baseball, if they want the foreign substance rule enforced, just tell the umpires to enforce it. So in this story, Ken Rosenthal broke this, that in Bauer's start the other day, the umpires collected multiple balls he threw during the game, according to Major League sources. The balls had visible markings and were sticky and sent to the league offices for further inspection, the sources said. And I think you and I can properly read this as kind of a threat, you know, a little bit of an implied threat that this information is getting out there. When my question is, look, if the umpires are collecting baseballs and there's stuff on them, why aren't you going and checking Trevor Bauer? Like, oh, we think he might be doing. Well, then go check him. Enforce the rule. And if you're not going to enforce the rules, then stand down.
So the part that made you sick was what? The reporting of it? The idea that Bauer was allegedly doing this? What part made you sick?
The fact that it feels like that there's, and I don't know who it, you know, I mean, let's face it. Maybe it's someone with the Oakland Athletics, someone Major League Baseball is sort of fueling into this. He might be using foreign substances. Major League Baseball has the ability to get to the bottom of that immediately. And I'd love to know, you know, who made the decision to collect multiple baseballs, right? Was it the umpires who made that decision? And if the umpires made that decision, my next question is, why wouldn't you go out and check Trevor Bauer to see if he's got something on him?
Right. So this to me is in a lot of ways like Deflategate was with the Patriots, that the footballs that Tom Brady allegedly was using were deflated to a degree that allowed him to grip it and throw it better. So there's a ball associated with the quarterback. And in this case, if in fact it is the baseball that is associated with said pitcher, then you've got to go out and, hey, we've seen this before. Is there a nail file in the back of his pocket? And if so, do you just fire it outside? We got to make sure that we can get that. So those are the types of things where if you can associate it with a particular pitcher, you go and do that. And in this case, that's exactly right. Feels like they're feeling out the rule. Do I need to now, once I've told the baseballs, you know, go over and examine the pitcher, his uniform, his glove, his hat, et cetera, et cetera? Or did I do my job by sending the baseballs into Major League Baseball? But again, the risk there is how you prove something like that. How are they going to now go back and say, yep, oh yeah, it was on his glove. It was on his hat. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's why I find it to be ridiculous. So you collect some baseballs with some sticky substances. I'm not a lawyer. I would love to do that chain of custody case argument on behalf of Trevor Bauer. Let's see. The attendant in the umpire's clubhouse handled the baseballs. The bat boy handles the pine tar rag handled the baseball. The umpire's got 50 balls in that little pouch he has. He handled the baseball. It hit a bat, which has pine tar on it. It hit the ground. It touched three fielders. And we're going to say for sure it's Trevor Bauer. Give me a break. What I don't understand, right, Carl, really, is why Major League Baseball is reluctant to just tell the umpires, look, go out and check the pitchers when the game starts. See if they have foreign substances on them, just like they check hockey sticks before a hockey game. And then let's go.
That all sounds well and good, Buster, until the pregame check, everybody's clear, or the first inning check. That looks good. You're going to check for the next five innings when he's still on the mound? Because once you're innocent, what would prevent you from finding or somebody putting some substance on some glove or somebody's helping you out with your hat? Then you got to go back and recheck it. So the initial check, not like an airplane where you make sure that the tires are inflated and you can leave. The idea that you can make these adjustments through the game, that preliminary check doesn't, to me, serve a great purpose. I mean, that's really not what, when I see a ball that's got stuff on it, then I'm going to go check. But until I see a ball with stuff on it, what am I going to go check every single pitcher that's coming into the game?
Well, yeah, because you're right. That absolutely could happen. The story doesn't make clear who was the one who directed that the baseballs would be collected. But right, whenever that happens, yep, then go check the pitcher. If someone's saying that there's stuff on the baseball, then go check the pitcher. What is the reluctance of Major League Baseball to order umpires to enforce the rule? I don't get it.
No, I don't. But I think the more valuable lesson in all this, Buster, is before you read an article like that, you shouldn't eat anything.
Oh, you're right about that. All right. I want to ask you before you go, just a very self-serving note. We have this E60 1-hour documentary on the life of Freddie Freeman that's coming out on ESPN on Sunday, 2:00 and 5:00. And I got to tell you, Carl, this interview with Freddie that I did, the first one, which was the day before Thanksgiving, was one of the most remarkable experiences that I've had at ESPN. You and I have talked to players who've been emotional, who've recounted really difficult circumstances in their life. This was one of the first times I've ever seen anyone I spoke to who really worked through his pain. Our interview was scheduled for 90 minutes. Carl, as Freddie made up his mind, he was going to talk about his mom and his father because he felt like he wanted to honor them. And he walked through every memory that he had, the details of the death of his mom when he was 10 years old. And part of the reason why the interview was 4 hours is because he kept breaking down, and then he would fight back and compose himself, and he would tell the stories. I mean, what a remarkable person.
Well, I think what I've found, Buster, through my own life and perhaps through yours, there comes a time in your maturation process and your authenticity and your willingness to be vulnerable, where you're comfortable in all of those aspects of your life, and you're certainly comfortable in your own skin. And there are fewer guys in baseball who are more comfortable in their own skin currently than Freddie Freeman. and the experiences that he's had all the way up to, you know, the birth of his two children, the coronavirus, the skin cancer, the dad, all of those things, you know, at that point of his life, we've all got to know him a little bit. He was willing to say, look, you guys, I'm going to empty the bag here. I'm so comfortable in doing it. And it's a wonderful feeling for him. I know this, to be able to do that. I'm glad that you got the chance to see that. I'm glad we all got the chance. I can't wait to see the entirety of it. But when you hear the others that have been interviewed for the show talking about him, when you hear the way you know him and talk about him, the way that I know him, it's just another layer of Freddie Freeman that he's willing to allow people to see. And this has always been the knock on athletes or baseball players, and sort of the back and forth between broadcasters and players, agents and players. You've got to let these folks see who you are. You are a wonderful person. You do more than just catch and hit and throw a baseball. And Freddie's done a great job of sort of landing this airplane on the runway now, where it's just another layer. And that's my observation, that when you're a 21-year-old, you don't know what's going on. The world's moving way too quick. When you're at the stage of his career and his life, with the people in his life, you're just more willing to do those things. And that's what this interview is all about. That's what this show is all about. And it's difficult to get there, but when you get there, it's just wonderfully rewarding for the individual, and then everybody else benefits by having the chance to meet him.
You will really enjoy it. It's got nothing to do with me. It's got everything to do with the layers of love that Freddie Freeman has in his family. And that's going to be, it's reflected in all the, you know, the interviews we did. That's for sure. All right, Carl, thanks for talking me off a ledge. I just, you know, I appreciate the advice. No breakfast before I read stories about foreign substances.
Exactly. Have a great day.
Here's part of that Freddie Freeman E60 documentary. Give a listen.
It's about 1 o'clock. Classroom phone rings. They said I need to go to the office. There's a big courtyard. As I'm getting closer, I could see through the windows. It was my Uncle Mark, my dad's brother, and my brother Philip. Obviously just bawling. I'm about 100 feet away, and I just took off running straight for him. Because I knew.
On June 13th, 2000, Rosemary Freeman died. She was just 47 years old.
I remember when we were in the facility, I can picture him still leaning against the wall, uncontrollably crying. When he went to go say his goodbye, my dad was with him.
I asked my dad if I could go back in there. By myself. So I went back in and just hugged her. And just kissed her on the forehead. And I just couldn't believe she was gone. I don't even know how you process that as a 10-year-old. Everyone kept telling time heals, and obviously when you're in that moment, you don't think anything is ever going to help.
When she passed away, he lost everything. His whole world flipped upside down. Who Freddie wasn't there at that time.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply.
Todd Radom is the chief executive of our weekly quiz. He's a graphic artist whose work can be seen on ball fields all across America, all around the world, or you can go to his website, toddradom.com. Todd, how you doing this week?
Doing well, Buster. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I do have some TV duties this morning, so I got to move us along. Tell us about your forgotten franchise this week.
All right, Buster, we have witnessed a renewed discussion on the Negro Leagues in recent months. And so with that in mind, this week's forgotten franchise is the Chicago American Giants, Black baseball's first great dynasty. This club was organized and managed by visionary Andrew Rube Foster, the driving force behind the creation of the Negro Leagues. The American Giants operated for 42 seasons and are recognized as the longest continuous franchise in the history of Black baseball. Their aggressive yet disciplined style of play made them famous. They traveled in style, traversing the country in a private Pullman rail car. And they made a lasting impression on a 12-year-old Buck O'Neill when Foster and the club came to play an exhibition game in O'Neill's native Florida. Buck later wrote, quote, "For us, seeing the American Giants in their red and white uniforms and CAG across their shirts, it was like seeing the gods come down from heaven. Relying on speed, defense, and pitching, and build as the greatest aggregation of colored baseball players in the world, the American Giants won pennants in each of the Negro National League's first three seasons. The club played at Shorelings Park, formerly known as Southside Park, and this was the original home of the Chicago White Sox at the turn of the 20th century, located four blocks south of their current home. The American Giants sometimes outdrew the Cubs and White Sox, and they moved their home games to Comiskey Park in the early 1940s. This club played across several different leagues after Foster's death in 1926, and they continued to prosper wherever they went. All in all, the American Giants are credited with two Negro League World Series championships and six league titles. Aside from Foster, who was inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame in 1981, some standout stars, Buster, include shortstop John Henry Pop Lloyd, catcher Bruce Pettway, and outfielder Cristobal Torriente, who was known as the Babe Ruth of Cuba, as well as Oscar Charleston and Cool Papa Bell, who each played for the club for a very brief period of time. Rube Foster famously said of the Negro Leagues, "We are the ship, all else is the sea." The Chicago American Giants stood tall at the helm of that ship in the earliest days, and they, Buster, are this week's forgotten franchise.
Oscar Charleston, you know, Bob Kendrick came on the podcast, the president of the Negro Leagues Museum in Kansas City, and we were having a conversation about who, you know, is the greatest player in the history of baseball. Oscar Charleston is among those who's mentioned that. Who do you think, when you think of all the players who played, who do you view in your mind is the greatest player ever?
Ever in the history of the Negro Leagues? Ever anywhere?
No, not yeah. Any player anywhere? Because I've for years I've always thought of Willie Mays being the greatest ever. Who would your guy be?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Willie Mays, because of the five tools involved. I mean, it's just, I'm gonna punt to some degree on this, Buster, because it's so hard to compare eras. But yeah. You know, Babe Ruth. What would Babe Ruth do in today's game? I have no idea. But to your point, and I want to hear your answer, and I think I know what it is, because I think we've talked about this before. You know, you hear these stories about Oscar Charleston, and, you know, here's the thing. This again, renewed discussion on the Negro Leagues and a look at the statistics and all that, I think we're all going to learn some things via reinterpretation that we had no idea about.
Oh, I totally agree. Generally speaking, my belief is that players get better and better and better. I think Adam Ottavino, you know, famously said that he would have struck out Babe Ruth on three pitches or broke his bat, or he said something like that. You know what? I completely agree with him. But now, if you put Babe Ruth, the athlete, you know, from the beginning of his lifetime in this era, then he might still be the greatest player ever. Or Willie Mays, if you put him, you know, in this era, having, trained with guys throwing 98 to 99 miles per hour, he still might be the greatest player ever. But I do think that generally speaking, the athletes, the players get better and better.
Listen, part of what I do is I look at pictures, I look at images, and when I see the condition of some of these major league fields and ballparks and even locker rooms back in, you know, really up until the 1970s or early 80s, and goodness knows you've been to a lot of stadiums and behind the scenes and, you know, see what a locker room looks like today and what the training facilities look like relative to even 10, 15 years ago. It's night and day, but it's always an interesting discussion. And it's one of the great things about baseball. It's rife with discussion and maybe even arguments.
Yep, absolutely. All right, let's get to this week's quiz. I'm on a winning streak.
All right, speaking of arguments here. So, guys, the Dodgers wear LA on their caps for Los Angeles, right? The Reds have a C for Cincinnati on theirs. Which one of these clubs has never referenced the initials of their current home location on their headwear? Is it the Orioles, the Blue Jays, the White Sox, or the Athletics? Have never referenced the initials of their current home location on their caps. Orioles, Blue Jays, White Sox, Athletics.
Go ahead, Taylor.
Oh, boy. Let's go Blue Jays on this.
Dang it. You know, that was my instinct, too. But I don't like copying your answers, especially when I'm not completely sure. And I have a chance, if I beat you this week, Taylor, to completely bury you early in the standings. Like, you would be the Oakland Athletics. So maybe it would be appropriate for me to say the Oakland Athletics.
Buster is burying.
No.
Absolutely. You guessed that. You totally guessed that. Am I right?
I sort of guessed it. Yeah, I didn't know the answer. Not like last 2 weeks. Taylor, I mean, is that, you know, that image in my rearview mirror is not close at all at this point.
Oh, no. What a disaster. This is not good, everyone.
God, can you remember 3 weeks in a row for me ever?
I don't think so. I think this is unprecedented. Much like the discussion on the Negro Leagues, I could go back and look at the statistics. I can parse the record books, but you are clearly on an early streak, which will, you know, I just soak it all in, Buster. Now is the time.
Exactly. Before you go, give me 45 seconds on what do you think of the Boston Marathon uniforms of the Boston Red Sox, which was a discussion earlier this week on the pod.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot to unpack in 45 seconds, but here's the thing. They are not made for you or I. They are made for Taylor and the younger generation.
The youngins.
Yep, the youngins. And listen, I think it's curious. The Red Sox are the first club out of the box with this look. Listen, the club wants to market themselves in a little bit of a different way. Baseball is it's a long season. We have room for expression. Not my cup of tea, Boston Tea Party, but let's see what happens.
And remember, Todd, longtime Red Sox fan, so there's something visceral, I'm sure, about your reaction to these.
I might have jumped out of my chair a little bit and, UCLA, Boston, Yellow Sox, but we need to think differently and we need to market the game to a new generation and maybe even shorten the games and put some balls in play.
Exactly. All right, Todd, thanks for doing this and thanks for fostering all the success for me. I appreciate it. I'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for Fine Friday. First up, we have Trevor Dunning at TL Dunning. He writes in, "Hey, Buster, after the last play in the Mets-Marlins game, is it time to readdress what plays are reviewable?"
I wish there was almost like a common sense clause that was enforced in situations like this where, okay, so, according to the written rule, maybe it addresses it, maybe it didn't. It felt like this fell into the category of, let's get this right.
Yeah.
And I wish there was, as I mentioned, there's that great rule in the rule book, 801C, which gives powers to umpires to deal with anything that's not necessarily specifically drawn up in the rule book. And maybe this should have fallen in that category.
Next up, we have John Tolender at John Tolender. He writes, and I've heard a lot of people say Trey Mancini is a slam dunk to win AL Comeback Player of the Year, and rightfully so. But shouldn't Eduardo Rodriguez also get some consideration?
Yeah, one of those people saying Trey Mancini should get Comeback Player of the Year is Alex Cora, the Red Sox manager. but I think even he would also want to credit Eduardo Rodriguez for coming back from the COVID effect that he had last year and a year in which he had heart inflammation and had to sit out the whole season.
Next up, we have Hot Dave at Dave's Hot Takes. Great name on Twitter. He writes in, which run differential is more of a mirage, the Reds plus 31 or the Rays minus 19?
I got Rays minus 19. They're a better team than what they've shown early on.
We have Angus Young next at Decent Mustache, also a good Twitter name. Buster, where do you have Christian Vasquez ranked in the MLB at catcher? In my opinion, he's the clear number one based on his performance on both sides. Can call a great game and send a ball to the moon when called upon.
Well, if we're looking at the first week, yeah. But I think over the last few years, JT Realmuto clearly is the number one catcher in baseball. And as I talked about with Hembo on the podcast the other day, I think there's actually a gap between one and two. Christian Vasquez is narrowing that gap, and he has gotten better, and he's setting himself up for a heck of a payday.
Last one for the week, Kirk Fatul at Kirk Fatul writes in, it's early in the season, it's small sample size, yada, 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 but the Phillies have absolutely handled the Mets and the Braves so far. Could they win the NL East?
Yeah, I think they could. I think all five of these teams could win the division. Well, maybe not the Marlins actually win the division, but I could see the Phillies winning the division. Part of the beauty of the National League East is these teams are just going to beat the tar out of each other all year, which means they're going to stay close. So if you're the Braves and you go through a nice stretch like they have in recent days, you're not going to feel comfortable whenever team you play in the National League East is coming for you. And we've seen that so far. It's going to be the funnest division in baseball.
Alrighty, that does it for Bleacher Tweets. And one quick reminder here, don't forget about Sunday Night Baseball with Buster, Matt Vasgersian, and A-Rod. Phillies at Braves, 7:08 on Sunday evening. And you can also tune to a pair of games on ESPN Radio this weekend. Saturday, 2:30 tune-in time, Yankees at Rays. And then Sunday, we'll have Phillies at Braves as well. Tune in at 6 p.m. for pregame coverage there. Thanks, everyone.
And that Sunday night game from Atlanta with the Braves playing host to the Philadelphia Phillies will come hours after the Freddie Freeman documentary airs again. That's 2 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. That's it for today. That's it for this week. My thanks to Carl, Todd, and to Taylor, and to Freddie Freeman and his family. They were amazing during this process. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.